Hi, and welcome to Adlands Podcast. That was The Cosmopolitans with How to Make Your Husband Happy. And today we're talking to Ian David, who founded Fearless. Hey, Ian, want to tell us about that?
Well, yes. Fearless is an international network of ageless creative talent. And it's basically the concept of that talent is, you can be talented at any age. And I think there's it's a reaction to the kind of ad agencies that kind of tend to be a little bit youth obsessed and predominantly now made up of people in their 20s and 30s. Whereas the Fearless network of freelance talent, is the concept of it is that, you know, we don't really care how old you are. We only care about how good you are. And so anybody, we don't particularly give a fig how old you are. So you can be in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your 50s and 60s, and if you're a real badass at what you do, then you're on the team kind of thing. And that's copywriters, art directors, project managers, strategists, photographers, directors, producers, the whole gamut of the industry creative force, you know. So, and it was kind of born out of frustration. I was, personally, I was the classic case of a guy in his mid-50s who had been a creative director, a copywriter at a one shop for about 20 years and suddenly found himself downsized out, you know, because the agency I was with was hitting a little bit of a financial bump, and being one of the more expensive members of the team, I was let go, you know, and I had a little period of time where I was kind of I was getting work through, you know, just regular freelance work. But kind of left on my own devices, I knew that the work I was going to get was going to be, you know, I was going to get some copy jobs and, you know, website work. But I always kind of felt that I could, I had more to offer, you know, and no one was going to come to me with these kind of projects. But I thought to myself, well, someone did come to me and they wanted a brand values campaign or a multi-channel campaign or a set of TV commercials, I could do it. I mean, I couldn't do it all myself, but I knew all the people that I would need to bring in to help me achieve it, you know, whether it's an art director, producer, or, you know, the whole team, directors, DPs, gaffers, you know. I had this network of trusted collaborators and friends that I'd built up over the years that I knew I could call on, and they would all be experts in their individual fields. And so that's where the idea of this network started. It was like, you know, it's, you know, and then it's kind of then with the old ageism thing, I just start kind of thinking like, well, how can I expand this thought into something more substantial? And so that's where the idea of Fearless, that's where it was born.
Yeah, no, it's exceptionally well timed. First of all, I mean, like you said, there's a lot of ageism chatter, but also like I commented on it when you launched, I was saying it's only the advertising industry that I know of where they basically scoff at people knowing what they're doing. Experience counts for so much. You save time and you save money when you actually know what you're doing. So it makes no sense to me to throw away experience. And like you say, there's so many people that you have as trusted collaborators for a long time. So that makes complete sense to me that you would want to continue working with them, and you can do more things because of your experience.
Yeah. And what I found was that there's a ton of talent out there that's in exactly the same position. You know, all the things you said there, it's absolutely true. There's a lot of people who feel like they're actually at the top of their game, and they feel like they've been marginalized, that they're, you know, they're at the top of the game, but the game as it's being played right now has no place for them. And that's the thing that was coming back to me when I put up some posts on LinkedIn and Twitter. That, I mean, I was literally bombarded and overwhelmed by the responses I was getting, and from the breadth of places that it's coming from. It's coming from all across the United States. It's coming across from the UK and Europe, Australia. You know, I mean, just everywhere. And you know, some of the responses were short and pithy. They basically just said, love it. Where do I sign? If you want me to open a Portland office, let me know, you know, or a Sydney office, let me know. To like kind of lengthy, kind of like almost like cathartic thank you we need this so much. You know, I really hope you succeed. If you ever need me to jump in with anything, just let me know. I'm ready to help, kind of thing. I mean, it was really, really fascinating. So it really, it has resonated. And I mean, I'm literally in the process now of like building out the like a Slack account so that I can have everybody on board so that when the virus, the all clear on the virus goes up, I can really get back after like actually trying to get business kind of thing. Because what I want to do is I want to use Fearless as like a hub where projects big and small can come in, and then I can parcel it out to the right people based on the requirements of the assignment, the budget of the assignment, you know, the location of this assignment, and just general skill sets that they require, kind of thing. So, and the great thing about the network is, you know, as opposed to an agency, we get all these overheads, and you get like 30 people in a meeting that where only half of them are actually necessary. This setup would be you get just what you need and nothing more, you know, and all the people that get assigned to the project will be badass, like I say, really great at what they do. So in terms of costs and stuff like that, there's that kind of baked into the concept too. It's like it should be flexible, should be able to move quickly, and it should be cost effective too. So
That's nice. You're actually already answering a question I had lined up for later, because we're discussing like the virus and how it's affecting business overall and advertising agencies in general. I mean, the giant holding companies don't really care. I mean, if they're going to kick off 10% of their employees, I mean, sure, that's a lot of people, but it won't hurt a really large conglomerate that much. But if a small agency kicks out or has to like let go of 10%, they might just hemorrhage to death. You don't have that many people at a small agency. So to me, it seems like there's an opportunity here where clients who still need advertising need to find a way of cost cutting, because this does have an economic impact. And like you're saying, sort of tailor-made teams for what the project actually is sounds like another ideal timing thing. You have good timing.
Yes. And it's you know, like you're right. That we're about to go into another downturn, and you know it's going to be the same story again, right? It's going to be whoever's actually still around, they're going to be the most vulnerable. You know, it's going to be the people, perhaps, you know, who are in their 40s and 50s, if they are still, I mean, there's probably no one really left in their 50s, but I mean, if they're in the 40s, they're probably going to be the people most at risk from all this, you know. That's not to say that, you know, some of the cutbacks will probably go through across the board, but there's going to be a lot more talent out there, kind of thing. And that is the criteria for being a part of the Fearless team. Is like, if you're good, you have the potential to be on the team, kind of thing, you know. The other thing I would say about the crisis is, when it does, and I'm sure lots of savvy brand managers and entrepreneurs and CMOs out there are really planned for this already. But it's going to be a very different landscape we come back to, I think. When the all clear does sound, budgets will have been cut almost certainly, inevitably, and a lot of businesses across a whole raft of categories are going to be in a big hole. You know, they're going to, you know, and I kind of feel like, some of the things that passed for thinking over the last couple of years are just not going to cut it anymore. You know, like the whole brand purpose kind of malarkey, I think that's kind of been shown to be a bit empty, you know, because when a crisis really has arisen, some brands have stepped up, but a lot of them haven't, you know, and it's kind of shown it to be a bit of a fallacy. And the ones that have done that, you know, ones that have kind of guaranteed workers wages and benefits, like I think it was Apple and Old Navy and various other places. That's That's fantastic. I wouldn't say it's necessarily brand purpose, though. It's just kind of thing to do.
No, it really showed what brands like are just, you know, doing their sort of woke advertising just for show, and versus the brands who actually care about the people who are working for them.
Right. Yeah, it's not there's a big difference between talk and action, right? And and like I said, it's there's some actions that are kind of you would consider to be the minimum expectation from a large corporation with any degree of integrity. And even then, a lot of them haven't really stepped up, And so it's kind of really insightful. And I just think, a lot of these wishy-washy kind of methods of thinking, like brand purpose and influences and experiential, I just think that's great, and when times are perhaps good, but I just feel that when we do come out of this situation, the need is going to be for something pretty big. I think we're going to need the famous word, we're going to need some big ideas, and big ideas are going to be at a premium. And you're going to need, because some businesses and brands are going to need to be literally lifted up by their lapels and sat back on their feet. You're going to have to fight your way back, and big ideas need big thinkers, and big thinkers, the mavericks, like, mavericks or oddballs, the ones that don't really conform, but they have the capacity to think laterally and come up with transformative ideas. They tend to be the people that have been jettisoned over the last 15 years, not entirely, but, they are more likely to be the people that have been kicked to the curb. And we're going to need them back in the game.
I completely agree with you here. I completely agree with you here. It's like we have to go back to the big ideas and back to basics, where product was the hero in things. And like what we've been seeing in the past couple of days are all these brands trying to do the separating thing, and all they're doing is moving the logo letters away from each other. And it's first of all, that's like so first idea that should have been tossed in the bin every single time. I can't stand it. It's just bothering me so much. But also, we know to separate and everything like that. It's just like when McDonald's did it, they basically exposed themselves that they don't have health insurance for the people who work for them. So that was like a real poor choice for them. It exposes the hypocrisy. Like, we have this shiny advertising over here that says this, but in reality, we do that. So it's a really dangerous path for brands to go through now. So I think all the brands who instead like retooled themselves, and like Absolut Vodka is making hand sanitizer now, that's what you should be doing. Yes. You should just, and that's a much better idea. It's instead of making an ad about it, they were just like quietly getting on with it.
Yes. And they'll get all, and it'll pay dividends. I mean, it's the right thing to do. And eventually it'll come out that they're doing it, and they'll get the credit for it. And they don't have to make anything. They don't have to go up to create almost like false empathy say we understand, or we're part of it, or we want to be part of the solution. Separating the arches, it's just an empty thought that quite rightly has been derided and ridiculed. But the other thing is, like, who thought that was a good idea? Where was the adult in the room saying when that was on a board as an idea, like saying, yeah, let's do that? It's like, no,
well, I don't think it's a coincidence that all of the brands that actually started doing this for the big brands are South American agencies. I'm not going to knock South American agencies. I know how the game is played over there. You have to win awards to be able to get in the brass room, like, and get the actual salary, because people work stupidly hard there. And if you don't have awards, you're just not getting paid. So I understand why they do award bait, but at the same time, it's just award bait, that's not helping anybody in advertising. And we all see it, and we all don't care. It's just frustrating. All
right. Hopefully that's going to change a little bit. Like I said, I just think that, I just think of times in the past when companies have really been under the gun. And there was a famous campaign that Mary Wells Lawrence's agency did, Wells Rich Green, back when they had the American Motors account. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it was like American Motors, like 1968 or something, like what, years ago. But it was essentially, it was a brand that was about to go into Chapter 11, right? It was like at death's door. They had outmoded products that are only they weren't attracting young purchasers, and they basically came to the agents and said, "You got it. We need you to save us. Save the company." So they came up with this campaign where one of them was like, they had the Javelin, which was a kind of sporty model car, and it kind of compared it to the market leader, which was the Mustang, you know, and it was a side-by-side comparison. And it basically went through, you know, and this, so they've got the Mustang, which is the brand leader in that particular category, and this American Motors alternative. And they basically, the whole ad was designed to shift perspective, saying, okay, here's why this you may want to consider the Javelin instead of the Mustang, you know. And they did that across every category, you know, luxury vehicles or, you know, family vehicle, whatever it was. And that was their campaign, and it basically turned the company around. You know, it was just an idea, but it was no nonsense, go for the juggler kind of thinking. You know, it's like we haven't got time to fart around with, you know, wishy-washy think. We have got to, this is a business, for us to win, someone's got to lose. And that's what they did, you know. And that, I got a feeling that we're going to need a little bit more of that when when we get out the other side of this situation we're in now. Those kind of pieces of thinking, I mean, I love those kind of pieces of thinking. I think we should be
so do I.
But it's good.
I love pretty much everything Mary Wells has ever been involved in. she has like the best portfolio ever. When I was young, I wanted to be her. So
painting the airplanes different colors.
Yeah, the long cigarettes. Everything she did. I was just everything she touched. And that's funny too, because there's a lot of talk in advertising. It's advertising has been on this sort of surface kick about talking about diversity and women in advertising, and eventually you came to ageism. But it was always a discussion in surface level, because if you really think about it, there's been mavericks in advertising for as long as we can remember. So it's just that it became a fashionable thing to talk about. Just felt like they were doing this paint by numbers experience, like, we need to have people that look like this, not bringing in people who were mavericks that happen to be different too. Because I mean, if you're bringing in mavericks all the time, they don't fit in a box. They're not, you know, a man, a woman, a middle-aged black person. You know what I mean? Mavericks are mavericks. Mm-hmm. I felt that discussion was just, it's kind of insulting to begin with, that we have to have so and so many women in advertising. It's like, have you never heard about the previous ladies in advertising? Like, how long does your memory last? It's as if nothing happened before last year in certain people's memories. So I'm so glad you're bringing up all these classics here, because I studied all this. This was like, these were my gods.
I mean, I've just finished reading Mary Wells Lawrence's autobiography. It was like a big life in advertising, and you know, she wasn't backward in coming forward. You know, she was very confident in herself and in her approach to business and how she, you know, she was kind of fearless, you know, and it you know, her legacy stands in its own merits.
No, so, very no nonsense lady, love her. And I was also thinking about what we see now in terms of, business is going to change and everything, and there's probably going to be an economic dip. Another thing that the older generation, like you and I, have experienced is already previous big dips. I mean, the housing market dropped once during our careers. The dot-com boom happened once during our careers, you know, 1999. And everybody was like, the internet's never going to pay off. And my website is still there. It's like, it's been there since before that first drop, and it's been there like ever since, you know. There's so many things that constantly change. And so I feel like an older generation has more experience to roll with the punches, because that's what we've always done. We've like seen these dips before. It's not like, I mean, when things change, we just change with it.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, yeah. And you're kind of a little bit, I guess you're a little bit more immune to it. I mean, this is a pretty substantial hit we're taking right now in terms of, I mean, just change of, I mean, change of lifestyle. I mean, it's a big one for sure.
I don't mean to downplay or anything. I mean, I know it's gonna cause ripples in travels and tourism and all of that. And, you know, production is gonna probably have to change completely, because now we can't travel to Chile to, you know, shoot commercials cheaper anymore. So it's going to have a long ripple effect in that sense. But I still feel like bringing it back to sort of a local thing might be, you know, good for us. We're not going to be using influencers who are just parading around on flights around the world as somebody to sell our wares. We might actually go back to posters.
Yeah. I mean, I like I said, it's I don't think that kind of thinking is just too empty. And the task at hand is going to be it's not going to cut it, essentially. You know, we're going to need something bigger than that. So
it's been bothering me for a while that advertising seems to have relied a lot on, well, influencers. And well, I mean, I'm not going to knock using new medias when new medias come out, obviously, because that's always a good idea. It's just, it seems to be like it was always tagged on as an afterthought rather than this makes sense from a strategic standpoint and from the idea standpoint.
I think the thing about digital for me, the digital revolution, however you want to call it, is everyone, you've got to take things on its own merits. I think we can dispute the numbers about effectiveness, but it, you know, essentially digital has the capacity to target people better, you know, to find people, the right people at the right time in the right channels. And that should be a boon. But I think I think the hole we fell into was a lot of people or entities that rose up that kind of just were specialists in that. I think the problem ended up being that they thought that was all they needed to do. Like if you can get them and target them, you just need to drop something in front of them, you know, get it into their peripheral vision or somewhere in the vicinity of where they're operating. And that's all you need to do. And with, in fact, you know, digital is really just another channel. It's like anything, you know, whether it's a print, it's just like a print amp campaign or a TV spot. The channel just allows you the opportunity to sell your wares. You still got to create something that jumps out at people and stops them doing whatever it is they're doing. Because, you know, even if you're going through a feed, you're not in that feed to look at the advertising. You're in the feed for another reason entirely. So it doesn't mitigate the fact that, you know, all you've done is earn the right to participate. You still got to grab people's attention and jump out in front of them and then sell them something that communicates something specific, sells them something persuasively that, you know, makes them laugh, makes them cry, makes them reconsider a position, you know, all that kind of thing. And I think there was a little bit of, I think we got a bit carried away with it, you know, and thinking that digital is the answer to everything when it's really a channel that still needs a great message on the end, you know, with a bit of impact and, you know, so. And hopefully we'll learn that too.
Exactly. No, I agree with that too. I think digital has also suffered the idea that you should, I mean, it's basically shotgunned out. It doesn't really pay for the publications that have ads on it. And, you know, it's just, we're not really targeting in the way that we used to. I mean, we used to target specific readers of a certain thing, and now digital is just being shot out everywhere. So we don't necessarily know where the ads end up either, even though we have all of this targeting system. So we can basically stalk individuals all over the internet. But then it becomes like, I shopped for a pair of shoes and suddenly all these shoes ads are always following me around the internet. So it's been handled wrong. And I really haven't seen, in the way of banner ads, anything good in a really long time, to be honest. And I have one browser that I use without like ads blockers on it, just to be able to actually see banners.
Yeah. I mean, what is a banner ad if it's not like an outdoor board sitting on your computer screen, you know? It's the same discipline, right? Essentially, you know, if you was charged with creating an outdoor board, you think, okay, I've got 5 to 6 words. It's got to be, you know, it's got to be pithy. It's got to be impactful. It's got to jump out. It's got to be, you know, the layout's got to be as simple as possible. It's got to maybe have some kind of cool visual. You know, this is the whole deal. But, you know, the banner ads you see are basically information. But then there's that you can just tell the way that the whole thing's come about. That kind of mentality hasn't been part of the process in creating the banner ad, you know. So, so that's one of the things I was doing with the Fearless when I was putting things onto LinkedIn and Twitter. I was kind of thinking of them as more like ads, you know, even though they're essentially posts. But I was thinking of it as like, okay, we've got an image and we've got the image and the headline, and then underneath it we'll have some copy. And I was kind of treating that as, you know, almost like body copy, trying to keep it short to the point.
It worked. You know, it communicated really well.
So I was trying to.
That's why it resonated with everybody.
Yeah, and yeah. So literally. I mean, I said to you before. I mean, it's resonated, and you know, what I'd really like to do is if this thing works, I'd love to get an automotive project. You know. Because I just think the current state of automotive advertising at the moment is pretty bad. It's and some of the people that have reached out to me, I mean, I think to myself, oh man, if we could get
a car brand,
an automotive client, oh yeah. And if I was going to assign a couple of teams to work on it, it's like, man, these guys and girls, they would freaking kill it. They, you know, do you know what I'm saying? And they were, not only are they good, they're itching to do it, and they've kind of, many of them got like, probably got a point to prove, you know. And so all that rolls into the attraction that should be an attraction to a marketing manager, you know, like you got all this talent sitting out here that's itching to help you out, kind of thing. And they really can. And you know, so yeah, so that if I had a big hairy goal sitting at the end of all this, it would be someone from a major car manufacturer saying, hey, you got this, could you take a look at this?
Oh, I pray that
you know, we need a bit of fresh
thinking.
I pray
that somebody at Fiat hears you, because their ads are terrible. Well, at least in the United States their ads are terrible.
Well, it's basically the same ad, isn't it? I mean, how many spots have you seen that you have an implausibly young person driving an improperly expensive car through the urban jungle? They get frustrated, they take a side road, and before you know it, they're driving out in the middle of nowhere where they're surrounded by mountains, or they're down by the beach, and they either go surfing, or, you know, they commune with nature on the top of a mountaintop, and the line is saying goodbye, experience the all new.
Personally working on car brands, but it's just the constant rolling footage of the car driving. It's just like, do we have to all the time? I know you want to show off the car, but it gets obnoxious in some of the ads where it's like all rolling footage and 2 seconds of concept.
Yes. Yeah. And it's just ideas, really. I mean, it all comes down to the ideas and thinking, and like, there are other ways of doing it, and they're not being utilized, you know. And but you know, sometimes I feel like cars sell despite the advertising, not because of the advertising.
Yeah.
You know, And like I say, like, come back to what we said earlier, is that maybe when we get out of this, there's going to be a need to actually sell some cars. Like, we have actually got to sell some cars.
And that's a big chunk of money for a lot of people. So you need to really have a good concept to sell it. I mean, there's been a couple of car brands who have tried to do things differently, and not all of them have survived, unfortunately. So I really think that car advertising could use a change. That is a category that really could use a change. You would probably win a lot of ground just by being different.
And the thing about car advertising, it's some of the legacy work with car advertising is, you know, shows it up for the dearth of what we're experiencing now. I mean, car advertising needs to be the gold standard for the entire business. You know, it would be the VW or the Volvo or the Porsche work that would get people excited about working in the business in the first place, you know?
Yeah, I remember a Goodby headline for Porsche where they said it's like peanut butter to the roof of your mouth and you just saw the speeding Porsche. I can't unforget that headline now.
Yeah. So, you know, that legacy work is, you know, like I said, that was the stuff that would lit a fire in my imagination when I was younger. And I'm sure it did for countless other people, you know. So, again, there's, you know, it'd be great to sort of, you know, if we could switch tacks a little bit and get after some more inventive, more lateral thinking with the car work, that would be fantastic. And, you know, if we can all, there's a lot of us out here that with the capacity to do that, and that I really would like to do that. So
the shot, U.S. has an extreme advantage over other countries after this all blows over a little bit. If there is, it's going to be travel restrictions for a while. There's like 100 places to actually do commercial shoots in the U.S. for scenic looks. You don't have to leave the country to find a client and create the work. So, I mean, it's a lot harder for somebody in, let's say, Liechtenstein, if they're not allowed to travel to the rest of Europe, because that place is about as large as a stamp.
Yeah, well, I kind of found it interesting that the Hyundai Super Bowl spot, Smart Park, which is essentially a product feature. You know, it's like, it's not driving in the middle of nowhere. It's not getting frustrated with the urban landscape. It's actually a spot devised around a feature of the car. You know, now whether it's completely...
No, it's not. It's not. Sure. Tesla has it as well, which is even better because now they own it because of the ad.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I read somewhere, I think it was on Rich Siegel's website, he'd done a bit of research and he found out that Hyundai experienced an uptick of sales in the immediate aftermath of the Super Bowl. And, you know, he said we can't necessarily draw the conclusion that it was all because of this spot, but, you know, you have to think that it must have played a part. You know, he got a distinct product benefit being literally advertised. And it was done with wit and charm and executed perfectly, great performances. And that's the kind of stuff that we all like to create. And that's the kind of stuff that in this instance seems to have worked, you know? So
yeah, I mean, let's do more of that. I mean, I think also they probably did get it directly from the ad, because I can even picture people just stopping into an automotive shop for Hyundai just to say Smart Park. You know, and then once they're in there, you know, the salespeople just get their claws at them and boom, they walk home with a car. It wouldn't surprise me at all, to be honest. I mean, it's too funny too, because everybody remembers it because they all want to mock that accent. And that accent is the funniest accent ever. Mm-hmm. And I forgive them for using celebrities this time too. I find using celebrities a bit of a wank, to be honest. But all of these guys came from Boston, so it made complete sense. So,
Smart Park is a little bit of lateral thinking, isn't it? Smart Park is lateral thinking. It's like, and that's the thing that that's the thing that catches. That's the thing.
Well,
that
it's a classic, you know? USP. They have a unique selling proposition that nobody else has in the car industry, and they went 100% on it. Instead of like, oh, we have like 27 features, and here's running footage, and here's another feature, and here's running footage, and here's feature running footage, and here's the sunset running footage, and it's like nobody cares. You forgot all the features at that point. It really is concentrate and sell one thing. So. I was going to ask you, what's your next step for Fearless?
Like I said, next step is we're using this downtime to kind of get our ducks in a row in terms of like, say we've had a overwhelming response from the creative community, been bombarded with, you know, requests to connect on LinkedIn and things like that. So my next step is to set us up for when the all clear sounds, and in so much that I'm going to get people onto Slack. We're setting up a Slack account so that we'll have all of our players in place, you know, we're going to know where the art directors are, the copywriters are, where the producers are, you know, maybe be able to divide up based on region and place kind of thing and skill sets and, you know, and so that's kind of, to me, that's just good use
of the downtime. Yeah.
This period of time. Yeah, I mean, I did have a whole bunch of other bombs that I was about to drop in the water before all this hit, in terms of just kind of piquing interest and just making the point that, you know, there's a lot of talent outside of there's probably just as much talent outside of the advertising agencies as there is in it.
And there's going to probably be more now. I mean, everybody's going to have to retool what they're doing now and start work from home and you know, distance working. I mean, now everybody's forced to learn Zoom for some reason. You know, it's just so everything is virtual meetings, and please keep your pants on when you're Zooming, people.
Yes. Yeah, and like I said, I want to stress that, you know, the whole thing about Fearless is agelessness. It's like, it's not like one group is better than the other. It's not like older people are more because they've been around, and they're better than the young. It's not that. It's about everybody, you know. It's about the full diversity of age representation, you know. That has to be a good thing, you know, in terms of just getting the broadest possible perspective. If you're a CMO or brand manager, you should be expecting to see more than just people in their 20s and 30s sitting in front of you, you know, especially if you've got a product that's appealing predominantly to, you know, perhaps more older people. You know, there's the other fact of the matter is that, you know, over 50s are, generally speaking, the people with the money, the spending power. You know, over 50% of all consumer spending is conducted by people over 50. The other thing I was going to say was that the over 50s are, you have to remember that today's over 50s are predominantly boomers, and boomers do not, like any other life stage that they've reached, they completely blow up the norms of what it is to be at that
age. Absolutely.
You know, and they're the ones that with the spending power to buy cars, to go on vacations, to buy homes, second homes, forever homes. They're still, you know, they're just living they're defining the category the way that suits them, and they're not conforming to expectations of what it is to be someone who's in their late 50s or early 60s or anything like that.
Exactly. My brother's a boomer. We're a generation apart, so and we still compete on like who's going to the coolest concerts. So his concert list in the future of this year is a lot cooler than mine. We've been texting each other for days about it. So I don't think people think about that when they talk about boomers. They think about some gray-haired old lady. They don't realize that, you know, it's the guy next to you at the Massive Attack concert.
Right. Well, you have to remember that gray-haired old lady may have been a Woodstock, or, you know, or went to see the Stones, you know, in 1977, you know, that kind of stuff, you know. So you know, it's interesting, but hopefully things are changing. You know, I do think that the fact that I actually think that the if we didn't do anything else, if we could just change perceptions about what it means to, you know, to be an ageless community for advertising, we'll have done our job, you know. I think the real power to change things ultimately is going to lie on the client side. When they start demanding to see a broader, more inclusive range of ages in front of them in meetings, just as they would for gender or for race, when they start wanting to see, you know, I don't want to see 20 and 30 year olds in my meetings. I want to see 40, some people in their 40s and 50s and 60s too. When that starts to happen, things will change in a heartbeat. You know what I'm saying? I think so. I don't think agencies are going to change their own volition. I mean, that, you know, again, there may be some lip service paid to the idea of, you know, there'll be a lot of talk, but there won't be much action. You know, I think it'll be for them to change, they'll have to be dragged kicking and screaming into a new world. And it's probably be the clients that will have the capacity or the power or the influence to do that. Or the rise of freelance networks like Felix, and I'm sure there are others, or there will be others, that will just make them rethink their
biases. Yeah, I think actually the situation as it is now, the clients are probably, some clients won't be able to have the money, the budgets for being an agent, like having an agency of record. And there's a lot of people that are moving from agency side to client side. So I think there's an opportunity here for networks like Fearless, because clients want to go straight to the talent rather than through an agency to make their budget stretch.
Well, you know, like any, we're essentially freelancers, you know, so we don't come with that baggage. We don't come with the building and the lighting,
the overhead,
and the snacks and the ping pong table. Yeah. So you know, our overhead is quite often a cup of coffee from the local coffee shop, and maybe a muffin. You know, that's essentially the, you know, and then it's after that, it's just pure thinking. You know, it's just like, you know, get yourself in a nice spot, get yourself a nice foaming cup of cappuccino. Yeah, your pastry of choice, and
okay, yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I appreciate that, you know, clients may finally be paying for what they're actually buying, because for the longest time, it seems to me that agencies have been wasting money on a lot of things, but they don't really pay creatives all too well until, you know, they get a certain amount of awards, and then suddenly they pay them way too much. So it's nice to see new avenues explored here, where the actual product, which is the creativity, the thinking, is the thing being sold.
So, yeah, and then, you know, maybe there is, you know, yeah. Could you ever become the agency of record for a major piece of business? Maybe, I'm not sure. Certainly could take on project work, you know, special ops missions and things like that. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how things work. My goal is, you know, like I said at the beginning, is I just got fed up with the status quo, and I wanted to do something about it. And I'm in the process of just shaking, ruffling a few feathers, making people think, seeing if a client or two, you know, we've had a couple of initial calls already, but I want it to be a lot more. And and once the idea would be, you know, get the opportunity, assign the team, and then just kill it, and then promote that, you know, say, and I definitely think if we're given the chance, we'll succeed, you know. And that's where we're at right now. It's like, you know, shaking the tree, causing a stir, piquing interest, give us a shot, and we've got the players to make it work.
All right. That's awesome. This has been a really, really interesting talk. And I think we're going to leave it at that, actually. Thank you so much for joining me on the Adland podcast.
My pleasure. And thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I've had a great time, and it was fantastic speaking to you. Shake up, shake up, burn up, burn up.